All right, everyone. The Roto Experts Fantasy Football Show. We're here. None other. Matt Kelly. You might have already listened to the TakeCast episode. You might not have. And if you haven't, I suggest that you do that. But right now, we're just talking Dynasty Fantasy Football for the next 20, 30 minutes or so. Starting it off right from the top, Matt, your most fire Dynasty Fantasy Football sell take right now.
Just chatting, Davis.
Just chit-chatting
about players, no fire takes, just casual banter, exploring the truths of fantasy football, dynasty leagues in particular. And the truth that we know to be the case is that quarterbacks are largely overrated. And in a single quarterback league, if you have the great fortune of rostering Patrick Mahomes, it is in your best interest and your duty as a dynasty leaguer to do right by your roster and put Patrick Mahomes on the block, because you are rarely going to find a situation where you can reap more value for a quarterback. It's never happened. I have Patrick Mahomes in a couple leagues and he's on the block. I'm trying to move him because I want future first rounders and I want skill position players at those other positions that are much harder to fill. You have a quarterback coming off a 50-touchdown season. Even Peyton Manning, first ballot Hall of Famer, he couldn't sustain 50 touchdowns per season. It's not possible. And now there's uncertainty around Tyreek Hill. And if Tyreek Hill is suspended, the number one is Sammy Watkins. That's terrifying. He hasn't been efficient since 2015 in Buffalo. And then the number three is who? DeMarcus Robinson. This is why there's risk with Patrick Mahomes. The natural regression where we see quarterbacks.
I think the natural regression is the biggest point.
Yeah, the natural regression, it fluctuates year to year. We see Matt Ryan being the QB2 and then the QB22 and then the QB4 and then the QB14. That's the nature of the quarterback position. It depends on the game situations you find yourself in, the schedule, how many shootouts are you in a given season. And all of that varies year to year. So knowing that, taking a step back and removing the emotion from the equation, I love Patrick Mahomes, but I'm putting him on the block.
It would just be so unlikely for him to be the QB1 for the next 4 years or whatever. Like, you could get some pretty insane dynasty returns for Mahomes right now, I think.
The returns are very good. You can get a 2020 first rounder, and that's very valuable because that will be a strong running back class. So very important to maximize the number of 2020 firsts in your pick portfolio, plus a quality player at either the wide receiver or running back position. Do it.
What is an exact target that you would be going for? Give me some player names. Say we have some listeners who are not in the player pick game, and they're like, I have Patrick Mahomes. I had the great fortune to experience the 2018 football season with Patrick Mahomes, but I'm ready to cash in these chips.
You don't even have to lose a quarterback in the equation. I did a trade where I sent Patrick Mahomes for Ben Roethlisberger, Robert Woods, and a second rounder.
I mean, that's just a home run.
It's a home run. But people want Patrick Mahomes, man. That's cool. That's cool. You know,
it's cool to want Patrick Mahomes.
It's cool. Yeah. You want Patrick Mahomes. I get it. But you know, the trade was not nearly as imbalanced I don't think it is imbalanced. I think the community thinks that's a pretty fair deal, because Robert Woods is not viewed as an elite dynasty asset for whatever reason. He never has been, and so he's been perennially underrated. And Ben Roethlisberger lost Antonio Brown, and he threatens retirement every season. So Ben Roethlisberger owners are trying to move off of him and go younger. So it makes sense. And the initial offers were much less, but I knew that the person just wanted Patrick Mahomes. And this is my advice I have for dynasty leaguers, is never target players, because you put yourself in a weak position, a weak negotiating position. You need to always be dealing from a position of strength where you're fielding offers from those who want your player, right? So I'm not proposing deals where I'm saying, hey, take Patrick Mahomes off my hands. No, I just say, I put it out there. Hey, Patrick Mahomes is available if anyone wants him, with a bunch of other players. So it doesn't look like I have him on the block. And then wait for any offers to come in. And then once an offer comes in, that first time an offer comes in, that's a bite. You're a fisherman at that point. You start reeling them in. They want your guy.
You move from there.
You want your guy. And then, so your counter can be way on the other end of the spectrum value-wise, right? You can ask this guy and say, I'm upfront and honest. I you're going to have to overpay to get Patrick Mahomes. Just before we go into this, so you there's no bad blood, so you know I'm operating in good faith here, and you don't get frustrated, I'm telling you up front, I am going to ask you to overpay for Patrick Mahomes. Now let's start the process.
I think that's a good way to go about things. I think people get frustrated in Dynasty with that. Like, my experience in trading in Dynasty is that people get frustrated easily. And, you know, there's no reason to get mad. We're all just here to have fun.
He's great. Yeah. I'm going to miss him. You got to overpay to get him off my hands. You think I don't want Patrick Mahomes?
There's the attachment because he's so great and it's so good to root for him. Like, you got to pay 110 cents on the dollar to get him.
You think I want Ben Roethlisberger on my fantasy team? The rapist Ben Roethlisberger? Hell no. I don't need those problems. I got to sleep at night. You going to give me Robert Woods? Done.
Yeah. Easy deal. All right. Running back, rookie running back that you're most excited for?
Miles Sanders. This one's not close because the class is so bad.
Yeah, I'm more like anti-excited. I'm more like just really sweating out how many of these guys are even going to get a chance to play.
Well, because you got to understand where opportunity comes from and where you can mine value in drafts. And typically, it's because a player was banished on the depth chart or for whatever reason was not allowed to fully bloom and blossom as a player, right?
Right.
And that's Miles Sanders. What happened? He was parked behind Saquon Barkley on the depth chart.
You can't hate on him for that. Like, what was he going to do?
What's he going to do? But then he goes to the combine and he tests like a more athletic version of Melvin Gordon. And when he was at Penn State, he flashed that Melvin Gordon skill set. Now, at Penn State, it's important to have the context, not just, I'm going to sort my list of running backs by dominator rating and speed score. You can't do that. Why? Because Penn State was one of the signature anemic offenses in college football, in particular, the offensive line. The reason why Saquon Barkley is a generational running back, even though the running back position is not very valuable, as a running back, he is generational because of what he was able to do at Penn State in spite of some of the worst run blocking in college football. He was generating so many yards on his own. He broke Graham Barfield's yards created measurement system in his final year at Penn State. Well, that was the situation that Miles Sanders was dealing with. And yet he was one of the most productive running backs in college football. And he flashed an all-purpose skill set. And then when he went to the combine, he was one of the only running backs with feature size, meaning 210 pounds or above, with great athleticism. It was like Miles Sanders and Alex Barnes. I mean, this very bad class. It's so underwhelming. He's the guy. If I'm going to draft a running back in the first round, if there's going to be a guy that's going to get me off all these receivers, it's Miles Sanders.
So I have a different answer, and he's not feature back size, but I don't really see that mattering as much in a modern NFL where guys are moving outside of the tackles more, and it's Justice Hill. Justice Hill is super fast. Yeah, he played as a true freshman. In fact, he was a lead running back for a Power 5 school as an 18-year-old. He had 31 receptions as a sophomore. And I guess the one thing that's weird is that he didn't do the agility drills at the combine, which I wish that he would have.
I think he's very agile. I think it's safe to say.
I think it doesn't matter.
Justice Hill, he's quick. And at Oklahoma State, in an offense that, you know, is stockpiled with talent, spread the ball around, I think that a 22.5% dominator rating, 41st percentile, is as productive as you could ask.
Well, his numbers also would have been a lot. There were a couple things that happened. One, Chris Carson was a senior who got outplayed by a true freshman, but they let Chris Carson get the touchdowns. Chris Carson had 10 touchdowns on 86 carries his final year And then the next two seasons, he seeded 10 touchdowns on 61 carries to his quarterback. And then the same thing happened his junior year as well. They gave the backup running back some goal line carries, and they gave the quarterback, Taylor Cornelius, I believe is his name, they gave him some carries as well. So he kind of got vultured a little bit, which I don't really hold that against college running backs too much. Because a ton of these dudes, by the way, I actually been watching a lot of these guys this year. A lot of these running backs that we all love, Travion Williams, Damian Harris, Josh Jacobs, these guys got their touchdowns by one-yard rushes behind guys who are going to play in the NFL on offensive line against Northwest Missouri State.
That's right. There are very few undersized running backs that I would cape up for. In this particular draft class, there's two. It's Justice Hill and it's Darrell Henderson.
Because Henderson is my RB1.
Right, so Henderson has 8.9 yards per carry in consecutive seasons. That's never been done in the history of college football. Literally, the most efficient running back in the history of college football is Darrell Henderson. So I have him right there with Miles Sanders at the top of this class. It's just that he doesn't have Miles Sanders' feature size. The only other running back in our top 10 on playerprofilers.com's rookie rankings is Justice Hill because he's so explosive. Because I can see him being airdropped into one of these spread attacks at the NFL level and really producing as a Tariq Cohen type back. Now, RB1 may not be in his range of outcomes, but this is a bad class.
Right.
So it's the perfect running back to get excited about. We don't have a lot of size, speed specimens in this class to get excited about. So go with Justice Hill. On Player Profiler, in our data analysis tool, we have the top five comps. And of all the running backs in this class, Justice Hill's are the best because it's Jamal Charles. It's Reggie Bush. All his comps are excellent. He was as productive as you could ask for, it, like Miles Sanders, parked behind an NFL caliber starter in Chris Carson leading up to his final season in college. So there's value to be mined in Justice Hill. There's value to be mined in Miles Sanders. Darrell Henderson's great. And that's pretty much where it ends.
Yeah, it's not an appealing class. There are guys that people will cape for, but in general, I don't think that this will be remembered as a running back class like at all.
No, it's good. There will be a Le'Veon Bell come out of this class. We don't know who it's going to be. An RB1 will emerge. And then all the rest of the backs we will remember as being Monte Ball caliber running backs.
Wow, what a name. People loved that guy. People were really convinced he was going to be good.
That was a bad class. If not for Le'Veon Bell, that would have been the worst running back class of all time.
Yeah, but this is a wide receiver class, which we talked a little bit about on the TakeCast as well. Who are the guys you're most excited about from the wide receivers?
A.J. Brown, number one. So A.J. Brown is, it's so serendipitous that DK Metcalf is not only in this draft class, he was on the same field as A.J. Brown. And so it has disguised A.J. Brown, who I believe is an alpha at the NFL level, who gets unfortunately compared to Quincy Enunwa. I like Quincy Enunwa. I like him a lot. But A.J. Brown ain't Quincy Enunwa. He's a hell of a lot better than even the best case broken necked version of Quincy Enunwa we've ever seen. A.J. Brown was highly productive early in his career as a true freshman, over 400 yards. And then as a sophomore, which is what I zero in on, only 11 games played as a sophomore, 75 catches, over 1,200 yards, and 11 touchdowns on 16.7 yards per reception. So if you are a mega producer in your sophomore season, that vaults you, that launches you. Then the question is, do you have the size and the athleticism to complete the circle, right? You got to check all the boxes. And A.J. Brown checks all the boxes. There are two wide receivers in this class that check all the boxes. That's N'Keal Harry and A.J. Brown. And so to me, there is a distinct tier cutoff between those two at the top and then other guys down below that you have to make compromises, that you have to make a case for, you have to rationalize away. And that would be Paris Campbell. So for me, if I'm picking my Mount Rushmore of wide receivers this year, Paris Campbell's on that list. Is he A.J. Brown? Hell no. He doesn't have the age-adjusted college dominance. Is he N'Keal Harry? Hell no. He doesn't have that level of production, and he doesn't have the history as a true alpha in the passing game. But what Paris Campbell does have is exceptional athleticism.
He fits the mold, man. He fits the mold of what NFL teams want now.
He
can move laterally. He can move down the field. And I don't particularly care that he didn't get a ton of down the field targets in the NFL because he's so fast that I have zero doubt that he can do it. I just have no doubts that he can do it.
They're talking about Terry McLaurin now as a first round pick.
Yeah,
Mel Kiper has Terry McLaurin as a first rounder in his mock 7.01 or whatever the hell. Paris Campbell crushed the production of Terry McLaurin. Now, I put Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson off to the side when I'm looking at production because there's so much competition for touches and targets on those teams. So you can't expect Paris Campbell to post an 80th percentile dominator rating. This isn't Iowa State where Hakeem Butler played and he was the clear-cut alpha, even though he couldn't see the field as a freshman and barely produced at all as a sophomore. Paris Campbell, on the other hand, played, was productive, you know, at least his last three seasons, and ultimately posted 90 receptions and over 1,000 yards, and he operated as the alpha in that Ohio State passing game.
And he was open you look at these plays that he makes – and he's just open every time. And it's not because they're not playing good defenses. It's just because that dude was so fluid and so freaky that he just was always open.
Yeah, so if you're fluid and quick in short areas, but then you also have 4.3 deep speed, then you're fucking dangerous in the NFL, Davis. If you're an offensive coordinator, you cannot wait to draw up plays for Paris Campbell because he's so versatile. He can play in the slot. He can play flanker. He can play X. He can play all these positions. He is a plug-and-play receiver. He's also polished. If there's one thing that we like about the older receivers when they're older on draft day, like a Sterling Shepard, the one benefit you have of drafting that guy is that he's more polished. Well, Paris Campbell is more polished. I don't think he's a poor route runner. Far from it. He ran the routes he was asked to run to a place where he was able to post the best yards after the catch per target in college football. Paris Campbell is an exceptional talent, and if you're going to chase the athleticism, he fits the profile of what NFL coordinators want, and you could argue he's just as athletic, if not more so, than even DK Metcalf. So why isn't he being regarded as a Mount Rushmore caliber wide receiver? I don't know.
I really don't have a good answer.
I'm just going to draft him in rookie drafts and love it.
Yeah, and there are some people that think that he is not going to transition well to being a wide receiver in the NFL, and I think those people probably don't have a great sense of the direction that the league is heading.
That's right. They think he's Cordarrelle Patterson, and those people don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson, best kick returner in NFL history and a damn fine running back.
It's just that when the ball was in the sun, remember he had the ball hit his face mask because he lost it in the sun, and he didn't even have his hands up?
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean,
that was Cordarrelle Patterson. He didn't have a feel for the position. I think that those that watch the film, this is where once in a while – metrics don't tell the whole story, especially on teams like Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. Metrics can't tell the whole story, production metrics in particular. So you do lean a little bit on the metrics people. And like you said, they say he's fluid, that he has a great feel for the position. And you can see that in the fact that they're giving him carries, that he's playing on special teams. So all these things matter, right? That's the reason why we like Cooper Kupp. It was all those punt return touchdowns. That elevated
The special team stuff totally matters.
The special teams ability matters. You can go back to Antonio Brown. This is a window into a player's feel for the position if they're able to win no matter where you deploy him. And that was the case with Paris Campbell, and the opposite is true with DK Metcalf. You're posting him out on the outside like an ex-receiver from 1998. DK Metcalf and Hakeem Butler and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, for that matter, would be awesome in 1998. They were made for the NFL classic, NFL Films classic.
Yeah, they were.
Right? But in today's NFL, give me Paris Campbell. Give me players that look more like Deebo Samuel and Marquise Brown and Andy Isabella. I'm not sorry.
No, could not agree with you more. Last thing, do we have a Jeff Janis this year? Who is it?
We do. Oh, we do. We do. And this guy is one of the best small school receivers of all time.
Of all time? He really
all
is.
All time. And what's fascinating about Ashton Doolin is that he committed to Malone College the first year they decided to launch a football program. And then after he graduated, they closed the football program. But he saw the beginning and the end of their football program at Malone College. It doesn't get smaller. It doesn't get more irrelevant among four-year institutions than Malone College's football program. But when Ashton Doolin was at Malone College, all he did was catch every pass and score every touchdown in that passing game, which is why he has a 60% dominator rating. Is his 60% dominator rating inflated? Of course. He went to Malone College. It's the opposite of Paris Campbell. There was no competition for targets and touches at Malone. So if you're going to discount Ashton Doolin's dominator rating, you better put a premium on Paris Campbell's dominator rating. If
you can't have it both ways, people.
It's good for the gander. You can't have it both ways. But Ashton Doolin's 60% is very high. Very high. The high yards per reception, the early breakout age. And then the question is, well, okay, fair. We have a long history, Davis, of productive small school wide receivers that did exactly squat in the NFL. Nothing, right?
But we have also a pretty good sample of dudes who dominated. Like, I believe Pierre Garçon played a D3 non-scholarship school.
Jerry Rice, small school player. Terrell Owens, small school player.
Marcus Colston.
Antonio Brown. The list goes on and on.
Miles Austin, small school player.
Long list. What did those players have in common? We talked about special teams ability with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, Doolin had like 5 kick return touchdowns.
Vincent Jackson, 98th percentile speed score. So you got to give me some athleticism. Throw me a bone with the athleticism. So I was looking, when I saw that Ashton Doolin received a combine invite, that was incredibly encouraging.
It's wild that he got a combine invite, actually.
Well, it's telling, Davis. It's telling that there are film grinders in the NFL that saw grainy film
of
Ashton Doolin and decided to give him an invite.
I read an article that said that a majority of NFL teams had a scout go to Malone University's campus at some point during the year, and a few teams went twice.
Something happens with certain players where the buzz starts. I don't know why there was not more buzz for Scott Miller from Bowling Green. I don't know why there was not more buzz around Jazz Ferguson, right? Even though he did get invited to the combine. There's just certain players that aren't afforded the same amount of buzz from small schools. And I will never understand why Justin Christian from Marist didn't get a combine invite. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Brody Oliver from the Colorado School of Mines had 26 touchdowns in his sophomore season. He should have got a combine invite. The buzz helps certain players and suppresses others, and the buzz is helping Ashton Doolin, and all he had to do was deliver at the combine in order to justify fifth-round draft capital. He just needs to be the next Justin Watson. That's all we're asking. We just need the next Justin Watson, right? So what does he do? Oh, 4.43 at 6'1", 215. That equates to a 111.6, 93rd percentile speed score with above-average burst and agility. So now Ashton Doolin suddenly checks all the boxes. There are only 2 wide receivers in this class that check all the boxes at the 80th percentile or above. It's N'Keal Harry and Ashton Doolin.
Ashton Doolin, All-American track athlete in the summer when he wasn't playing football at Malone University.
There is a very, 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 very good chance that Ashton Doolin is in fact good at football.
Maybe he'll come on the podcast.
That's a great candidate.
I should ask him. I'll ask him.
I'm going to have Kelvin Harmon on the podcast.
Just to tell him how bad he is?
No, he committed. He's coming on. And I feel bad. I'm embarrassed because I'm like, you're not it's athletic.
It's not going to be fun for him.
This isn't going to go well. Or I'm just going to be a total fraud and kiss his ass because he's an athlete.
Yeah, no, you should do that instead.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. Matt, tell people where to find you.
PlayerProfiler.com. On PlayerProfiler.com, you can see our rookie rankings that we referenced today. You can also go to the podcast or Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, type in Roto Underworld Radio, and we are breaking down rookies every week, as well as sleepers for seasonal leagues, and just getting you prepared for the NFL. The season's going to be upon us, the draft, and then the Scott Fish Bowl, and then next thing you know, week one, kickoff.